Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 3 for Spring Semester 2016. Lecture 10, delivered on February 11, 2016. The title of this lecture is Annuities and Perpetuities in Practice.
Today, Annuities and Perpetuities in Practice. I'm going to do something here in just a minute, but as a run-up to that, when you're doing these kinds of problems, practically, and on the quiz and the exam, a test for the chapter, you'll see that there are a few twists and turns, and there's more than one way to attack one of these problems. And I don't want to discount some way that you might have found to do it, other than the way that I'm going to show you. But in some occasions, hang on here, let me turn on the projector. You might have a level annuity hidden inside of some other kind of cash flow structure. Like, for example, if I told you that you're going to get, let me set this up on the document camera. This will come up here in just a minute. But suppose that you were going to get, in the first year, 1 year out, you were going to get a payment of $400. And then a year later, you were going to get a payment of $500. Okay, there you go. Let's see if I can get this to actually show. There. Forgive me, this doesn't look too good, but this was the only pen I had in my pocket. You will get $400. Doesn't look too good. It's about as good as, let me zoom in, maybe that'll help a little bit. Where? Second, under. Oh, there are two. Oh, sweet. I'll have to put it back there. Case. Okay. Well, let me do that then. Thank you. Well, now I can back this out a little bit. You will receive $400 in 1 year, $600 a year later, then $400 in years 3 and 4, and then $500 in year 5. What is the present value? Of this annuity, if you discount at 7.5%. Now, as I said, there are several different ways to skin this cat. And you'll find that that's true with a number of the problems that you get in this in this time value of money kind of environment. First of all, drawing out the timeline, here's where we are now. In 1 year, you're going to get $500. I'm sorry, 400. 400. In year two, you're going to get 500. In year three, 400. In year four, 400. And then you're going to finish off with, I'm sorry, that was 600 in year two. Sorry about that, 600 in year two. And then in year five, you're going to finish off with $500. And that's, again, I can't emphasize, these timelines are actually quite useful for visualizing the problem. Look, the brute force approach would just be to take the present value of each one of these and then just add them up and get your answer. In other words, 400 times 1.075 to the negative first plus 600 times 1.075 to the negative second plus 400, etc. You could just do it that way and add them up. The downside, of course, is that that's going to take you longer, and there's also the possibility, more of a possibility, because there's more calculation involved, you could make a mistake. Now, on the other hand, what you could do is to rearrange this a little bit and create a level annuity with a couple of pieces hanging off it. In other words, this is actually a level annuity of $400. But there is an extra $100 chunk at year five and an extra $200 chunk at year two. So what I could do is find the present value of the annuity and then pull in just those two pieces as lump sum present values on their own. Let me pop over here and quickly, I'm going to mute this for just a second while I can get to the financial calculator. Bear with me one moment here. I meant to pull that up, and I didn't before I started. Three. And get the financial calculator up here. Okay. So the first thing that I would do if I wanted to play it this way is I'd say, this is a five-period annuity. N is 5. The I over Y is 7.5. Is that what I said, 7.5%? 0.5 I over Y. Enter. One period, one payment per year, one period per year. And then I could say, my payments are 400. Payment, and then compute the present value. So the present value of the annuity, the level ordinary annuity hiding underneath, was what? $1,618.35. $1,618.35. Now then, I can pull in each of these pieces on its own, just as crank it out calculation, and I would just do those straight up with a simple calculator. I would say, what is that first one? $200 times 1.075 to the negative second, and that's 173.07. 173.07, and then the $100 out there, 5 years would be 100 times 1.075 0.075 to the negative fifth power. That's $69.66. And then I can just add them up. Now, which one's going to be faster? Probably in this one will be a little faster the way I'm doing it than if you just took each one of those, pulled it back, and added them up. I don't know, though. With problems with longer time streams, it probably is going to be better to use the annuity approach. But anyway, finishing that up, $1,618.35 plus $173.07 plus that last piece, $69.16. Equals, and it's $1,860.58. $1,860.58. The only thing you have to watch out for, carry enough decimal places along the way. Now, with additions and subtractions, 3 to 4 decimal places to get 2 decimal places right is enough. The problem is that when you do multiplications and divisions, rounding error accumulates exponentially. And you will find, for example, that if you want 2 decimal places of accuracy in a 2-step multiplication division, you're probably going to have to use 4 decimal places of accuracy. 3 steps, you go up to 8. 6 to 8 is going to be what you need. So watch out for your rounding as you go along. For this one, you notice that all I was doing was, realistically, I was just, the final step was just addition. I'll probably be off by a few pennies, but nothing more than that. Now, something I want to point out here. Let me ask you. How long are you going to live? At what age will you die?
It's hard to guess, really.
I know. Take a stab.
Let's say
80s. 80s? 85?
Right.
Okay, 85 years. What would you say for you?
Me?
Yeah.
Well, I'm going probably 22.
I know, right? Yeah, there were times when I was in the Army, especially after a bar fight. Yeah, it's over here. But there are things that you don't know. And you probably don't want to know either. But the thing is this. When you get cash flow that is so way out there in the future, like 60 years from now, you're going to get $100,000 in 60 years. Okay? Yeah, let the good times roll, right? Do you give a rat's ass about that right now?
No.
Is that going to help you with the bills you have to pay? No, it's not right now. You see, when you talk about cash flows that are way, way out there in the future, they really are very small in comparison to cash flows that are closer in. Now, I can take advantage of that in some problems in the real world. Now, I'm not saying so much you would want to do that in a textbook problem in a class, but in real life, we do this kind of pretty frequently. We will say, all right, you got a cash flow, and it's going to be a level cash flow, or it's going to be a constant growth cash flow, and it's going to go on for, let's say, 50 years. Well, if it's a growing cash flow, I don't have a present value annuity formula. If it's a level cash flow, I do. But a growing cash flow annuity running 50 years, about the only way I could do that, well, there's another way I'll show you in a minute, but I would have to take the present value of the first one, grow it by the growth rate, then take the present value of the next one 2 years. Grow that one by 4%, then take the present value of that one 3 years out. over and over, clear out to 50 years. Now, that gets to be a pain in the ass with long-term cash flows, which realistically is what we have to do sometimes when we're doing like financial planning for individuals or very long-term projects in finance. Is there an alternative? Yes. If I had a cash flow that was growing at a constant rate for, let's say, 50 years, I'd define the present value of the perpetuity. In other words, I would pretend that it was an infinite cash flow and say, look, I'm going to be wrong, but that part of that present value of the perpetuity, the part of it that was contributed by years 51 through infinity is actually going to be small enough that the error I get is going to be trivial in comparison. So that's why sometimes if you have very long-term cash flows with a constant growth, but they're not infinite, you can treat them as infinite. I could even explain this. It's becoming more of a reality right now that in your lifetime you will see not planetary exploration with one small step for man, one giant, that kind of bullshit. You'll be seeing industrial projects on asteroids. And on moons of of our neighboring planets. You'll see that in your lifetime. Now, what that means is that we are now in the phase where we have to do realistic project planning. Cash outflows, cash inflows. The cash outflows are going to be relatively recent, relatively close in time, about 20 years. But then come the cash inflows. They won't begin for 20 to 30 years out there, but they will string out for 100 years. So instead of trying to figure out how to deal with 100 years, 30 years out, present value, we would take it more like a perpetuity streaming out forever, starting at about 30 years, find the present value of it there, and then pull that present value back to the present as a lump sum and compare it to the costs. I don't know if that made much sense to you, but yeah, there's one place where we're dealing with this right now. Another place where we deal with it is that most people have the idea that when a new technology, a new computer chip, a new video card, or a new technological thing comes out, there's been some R&D on it, and then they finish that R&D, they brought the product out, and then they start something new. No. Almost all of the big, high-tech, young companies have at least three, as many as five, projects in operation at any given time. There's one that is very close that's going to be introduced in the next year. But they're already working on the one that's going to come after that's going to be introduced in 3 years. And they're also already working on the one that comes after that's going to be introduced in 5 years. To the point where they are working on projects now that you won't even see for 10 years. That's how it's working in these companies right now. And we would not believe the things. It definitely sounds like science fiction, some of the stuff that they've got in their longer-term projects right now. As a matter of fact, I probably wouldn't even want to tell you because you wouldn't believe me. But yes, we are all these projects. So in other words, you've got cash flows that won't even start for 10 years. Those cash flows will stream out for 15 to 20 years. Part of it is residuals on technologies beyond that. But they've got to work on these cash flows that are going on for literally 50 years, 100 years. So we have to sometimes pretend that things are infinite in length, the cash flow. Well, we know they're not, but it's so far out there that the things that are way, way out there that we're adding that really aren't going to be there don't matter much. I'm going to ask you something here, and it's brought to light. It hit me sort of hard last Monday night. I had a friend of mine, speaker, for my finance club. And there's economics majors, accounting majors there, a variety of different business disciplines in the Illinois State Students in Finance. And he was a finance guy at a company here in town. It's a very large company that hardly anyone has ever even heard of. And he works in the insurance division, but he's finance, pure and straight up finance. And he was he had kind of a different approach. He's a can-do kind of guy, former Navy SEAL, real go-getter. He was a CFO of a company before he started for this company that he's working for now. And he wanted to show the real world of finance, which is financial calculators and Excel, and how we do it now in finance. A lot of it is with Excel. And he said, well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to show you a couple of dashboards here and get you up to speed on what we do with the dashboards these days. And it just hit me right there. I turned around to the students. I said, have you ever heard of a dashboard? Some called reporting dashboards. Have you ever heard of a reporting dashboard before? Mother of God, you've had accounting courses. They've never shown you a reporting dashboard before. Okay, reel it back a little bit here. Reel it back. Years ago, when Microsoft Office Suite was in its earlier stages, the one that everyone dreaded learning was called Access, the database. Any of you familiar with it? It is the one that makes you a Satan worshiper learning how to use it. So you're like, learning what in the hell is a relational database? And what is this screen I'm seeing? What do I do with it? Okay, Access is a database manager. And actually, many of the things that you see in your life are actually databases. But you don't see the database. Microsoft had a way you could put in all these databases, relate them and all this stuff, and then you could set up so that forms printed out and all that. But they knew that most people were not going to be able to handle this. They would just sort of wander off and say, FTS, I'm going to join a hippie commune. So what they did was they sort of said, there will be people who can write Access, but then there are going to be people who cannot write in Access. So what they would do is say, all right, you are an Access animal. You've got your kung fu, and you're doing your Access and all this. And then what you'll do is you will create in front of the database what they used to call a switchboard. A switchboard was like a friendly user interface. You never had to see that ungodly thing that is a relational database structure. You didn't have to see it. You would go in there, you would say, it would open up, and it would just be a pretty thing, put a number here, and then click this button if you want to print, click this button if you want to see a graph, click this button if you want to have a list of all of the items and the elements in the database that meet your criteria. It meant that you didn't have to see the back end. Reel us forward to now. Access is still used, but it has been replaced largely because Excel can do a lot of things that an Access database can, and has the extra advantage that it is more mathematically inclined. So a lot of people who are doing Access in companies, if you want to be noticed, they will write all of these formulas, equals, sum of, enter this number. They will get all that done, and then they will put a worksheet in front of it that is a dashboard. All the user has to do is put the numbers into the right places in the dashboard, and the answers come out on the dashboard. They don't see this mass of formulas in the background on the back sheets. They don't see how this is done. They can push another button. Would you like to see a pie chart? Click this. And in the background, in these other worksheets, it's creating that from what was entered. But in the front end, just pretty pictures is showing up. That's a dashboard. And as a matter of fact, you can even make it so that it doesn't look like Excel. I've seen dashboards that I swore, I didn't realize it right at first, that they were Excel. They looked like software apps. Just cool, almost like games. And they were actually Excel and hiding in the background. And on the front end, unless you really knew what you were doing, you couldn't even get to the place where you saw an Excel spreadsheet. But it was all Excel spreadsheets. So let me take that aside here, and I'm going to show you that same problem again. Let's do something like, for example, realistically, you probably wouldn't, if you were in a company, in an office, and you were needing to produce a simple present value of an annuity, like the one I described in that problem right there, what I would probably do is I would lay it out, and this is the primitive approach. I would go 0, 1, and then I would stream that out to 5 years. Is that 4 or 5? 5 years. Okay. And then I would key in my numbers. And I would just hammer them through. Oh, I screwed up. Screwed up there. $500. I would do it like that, and then I would just simply key in the formula once equals that times 1 plus 0.075 to the that power. My ass, I want that to be the negative. And then I would just copy the formula down to the bottom, and then I would sum it. Get the same answer. Do you see how fast that happens compared to the other ways? Learn your Excel. And learn MAD Excel skills, because I can tell you, I know this for a fact. If you have Excel skills, you are going to have a leg up on almost everyone else in the company, especially the older employees and the ones who went to colleges, online colleges or community colleges, even a lot of the people who are there who got degrees other than in hardcore business. What's bothering me is that we need a real serious, a business course in Excel, and we really don't have it, and we're not integrating it into the curriculum of our courses, hence why you'd never heard of a dashboard in your accounting. In fact, in accounting, they're still using tables, which is the equivalent of using stone axes to build nuclear weapons. Anyway, see how fast that happens? Now, sophisticating it, just to sophisticate it a little bit. Let's put this over there. So what that would mean is that, and I'm going to make it so that it is an absolute reference, so that it doesn't slide down. Dollar, dollar makes it an absolute, so it'll stay stuck on the same place. Oh, shut up. What do you mean? Oh. It's okay. Access and Microsoft products and I have worked with each other for years. Oops, I didn't mean to do that. See, and then I can change my discount rate without altering, without having to go through the formulas. I can just change it at will. I can say, all right, what would happen if, let's say, we boosted this discount rate to 10%? Geez. Boy, that sure certainly did. That dropped a decent amount. Okay, what happens in a rising interest rate environment? Okay, where right now the Fed is increasing interest rates. So you can see in real life, right in real time, why raising interest rates causes economic slowdown. The present value of future expected cash flows goes down, which means that projects are not as valuable. The cash flow from a given project becomes less valuable the higher the interest rate is. Therefore, a lot of projects won't be taken on because they are not worth enough to do. Another problem that happens, and I think I brought this up before, but now you can see it a little more realistically. Look, we now have went from an interest rate of 7.5% to an interest rate of 15%. In other words, what we're really talking about, in all honesty, it's a little more complicated than this, but this is the heart of it, is that I'm needing to find projects. Originally, I needed to find projects that could clear 7.5%, basically. Now I have to find projects that can clear 15%. So I am now no longer looking for projects that would discount at 7.5%. I'm looking for projects with an expected rate of return of 15%. Now, what do you know about when interest rates rise? What does that imply about the risk of projects? Higher interest rate, the higher the expected return, the higher the risk. So in other words, the really dark side is not just that you're not going to take on some projects, but the projects that you do take on will have more risk. You will have to go for more Hail Marys than you used to. Those long bombs. And of course, with higher risk, there's this unfortunate side effect that you get your ass kicked more. Hence, why we see more companies go into bankruptcy, because they are put to the wall taking on higher risk projects, which in some cases are going to knock the companies out. Hence, we see a business slowdown because not as many projects are being accepted. And we also see higher bankruptcy rates because companies are having to take on higher risk projects, some of which are going to knock them out of the ballpark in terms of their ability to pay their bills. And so we see the twin forces just happening right here in a nice, stupid, simple little Excel spreadsheet that we'll have in a higher interest rate environment. We will have fewer projects being accepted because that present value of future expected cash flows is going down, so projects aren't as valuable to take on. And you're also going to see companies having to try to take on higher return projects so that they are worth taking on, but with the higher return, they're going to be taking on higher risk. Hence, they are going to have more likelihood of getting creamed doing this. Now, let's try something here. I'm going to do a quickie thing. I am going to assume, I'll look at someone who probably will. Madam, I think you're going to probably live to be about 100 years old, okay? I know, right? It's not. That's pretty nice, okay? But the downside of that is by the time you're an old person, you'll be expected to work until you're probably 80. Okay, that'll suck. But and I mean, there's a plus side and a minus side to it. Okay, let's do something with Excel that would be a real pain in the ass to do any other way. But with Excel these days, and before that, do any of you remember the age of the spreadsheet that came before Excel, Lotus 1-2-3? Not a peep. God, I'm old. And before that, there was one called SuperCalc. So these spreadsheets have been around, but they have really been embraced in the 21st century, and especially in the last, honestly, in the last 5 years, just the Excel thing has exploded. The more you use it, the more comfortable you are with doing fancy things, not the simple stuff, but fancy stuff with it, the stronger your hand is in a company for which you work. That gentleman that I told you, he had been hired by one of the big companies here in town and hired away from another company. And he was going to be just a sort of an average employee. Yeah, he's got a military background. He's probably well-disciplined. He seems very bright. He's got an MBA in finance from ISU, got a bachelor's degree from ISU as well. But then when he started there and he started doing their spreadsheets, he became God in his department. He is now a manager. He is now being paid more, probably about four times what I'm paid. Son of a bitch. But anyway, the point's what I'm trying to get to here. Watch something here. I thought I could do that. Let's get that. I wanted to get all that stuff out of there. Thank you. I wonder why I did that. Okay. You are, let's say you're about 2 years from graduating. So in about 2 years, you're going to graduate. 2 years ago, you started here. Now, let me start with a quick question. Okay. What do you think the average salary of an ISU Business Administration grad is? Coming out, your initial salary. You want to take a stab?
Probably $40,000.
You're underselling. No, in your case, you're right. No. It's, huh?
Seven.
So, no, that's a little. Okay. It's highly variable. The accounting majors, damn their souls, get very high salaries and are pretty well certain of a job. That's, they have high, they top out. Then at the lower end, you'll see those who just got a BA, they didn't have a concentration. We're having a problem with the international business. I'm just being blunt with you. I'm going to delete this from the podcast. If you said I ever said it, I'll say you're a lying mofo. Okay, but marketing majors are having a very difficult time because there are about 16 grads for every one job open right now. Other majors that are kind of struggling at this point. Human resources is still struggling, but that's going to boom. There's a good chance that there's going to be some good stuff for the HR majors because there's so much compliance going on now. Now, that doesn't mean if you got a major that has a generally low salary, you're not going to get a good salary. But there's a lot of variability between 30 and probably 75 a year is the annual salary coming out of the gates. Now, in some cases, we have people who just, I know he's a former student of mine. He is still an assistant manager at Schnucks, where he's been ever since he was a junior in college. He bitches all the time about how life sucks and he's drunk every night and his wife's ugly. And then I have a couple of hot shots who came out of here in the high 70s, right off the bat, and they're now well above $100,000 a year, 5 years out. So it's very much your call and partly the prep that I can give you and other professors. But here's the deal. Let's say it's about, I'm going to pull, by the time you're out of here, as long as we don't go into a serious economic slowdown, about $50,000 a year would be the average. Now, the growth rate of that would be realistically about 5% growth rate. You could have done one of two things. You could have come out of high school and just started to work. A waitress at Denny's. Change your name to Mabel. Now you would have, let's say it was minimum wage, okay? $7.50 an hour, okay? And that, let's say that, now minimum wage jobs have a very bad historic history of growth. That's an outrage how it's happened. But we may be able to lock in some kind of a growth rate over the next few years. So let's say at the age of 18, you started working, okay? And at the end of your 18th year, you made $7.50 an hour, 40 hours a week, 50 weeks a year, get 2 weeks of vacation. Oh, I just get so sick of forgetting to write that equals sign. What the hell? Seriously, is that all you're going to make in your... Okay. Well, that kind of sucks. Okay. Format the cells. Currency. Dollars. Let's do it to 0 decimal places. Okay. Now, you're going to work... I can. Oh, I see it. That's right. You can do that cool thing. I never do that. I can't make it too big because I want to... Is that a little better? A little better? Okay, now, let's do the 19th. Okay. And we're going to have you work. And let's say you work until you're 75. What's the matter? Till the end of your 75th year. Okay? Now let's take a growth rate of, let's say, 4% in your salary. Equals that times 1 plus that. And we're going to make it an absolute reference. At the age of 75, you work your 75th year and then you're done. Now, what I'm going to do here is I am going to take the present value of those cash flows. Now this will occur, we're going to say this occurs at the end of the year, so this would be year one. Equals that times, and we're going to discount, whoops, let me back that out. Let's say that we discount these cash flows at 7%. So what we're going to do is we're going to say equals that. Now remember, this is at the end of the 18th year, so I have to discount it back one period. Times 1 plus that to the negative of 18 minus 17. So that would make it 1 year. Notice that you have to have a little bit of arithmetic thinking to be able to pull this off. My aunt, oh, that's right, okay. You following me? So in other words, your first $15,000 year salary, I'm going to back that back, take a present value of 18 minus 17 to the negative first, so that's what it's worth to you right now at the beginning of your life as a Denny's employee. Oh, I want to, by the way, I want to make this an absolute reference here too. And then I'm going to take each of these and bring its present value back. Notice something really sucky. Look at the present value at the beginning of her 18th year of that mass of money that she is supposed to be making at year 75. Do you see the succotudinality of that? It's worth only $2,771 to her right now. So let's take the sum of these and see what the present value at the beginning of your life as a minimum wage employee is when you start being that. I would add up all of those numbers. This is your life right here. You're worth $403,917.40. That is the value of your life at the beginning of your 18th year when you start being a minimum wage employee. You follow it? Okay. Now, let's see the same thing if you had decided to postpone and go for 4 years to college. So in this case, you would, let's say, earn nothing, or next to nothing, consider what they pay students these days for work, for 4 years, and then suddenly you would be at $50,000 a year. The growth rate of your income is going to be 6% per year. But in exchange for that, you're going to have a higher discount rate because what you're doing is riskier. What I was just pointing out, you go out, you get a job right away working as a minimum wage employee, there's hardly any risk to that. You do this, there's no guarantee that you're going to get a job that's decent paying. There's no guarantee that you're going to step out into a decent economy. You are in a higher risk position. So we are going to discount this one at 9.5%. That's about what we would put it at. That's what we're doing in financial planning right now. Okay? So now we're going to take these present values. You're still going to work to the point where you're at through your 75th year of life. Okay, but we're going to grow this one. So this one will equal that times 1 plus that. And then I should make that an absolute reference again. I always forget to do that. And then I'm going to grow that the same number of years, retiring at the end of your 75th year. Notice something interesting there. By the end of your time, and I will grow that a little bit, get that a little bigger. Your terminating salary is above $1 million a year. Yeah, that's probably pretty realistic. But what we want to do is now we want to take the present values of these equals that number times 1 plus that, absolute reference on that, to the that minus 22. I want to make that a negative there. What the hell do you mean? What did I do? No, because I'm wanting year zero to be. I'm going to do it from up here. Equals, well, shoot, I can just copy this over. Oops. Okay, Control C, Control V. And that one, my reference point for this one would be I. See if it works now. Nope, something's wrong. Nope, I want that to be. Why am I doing this wrong? F1, yeah, zero. F5, that one, times 1 plus the discount rate to the negative. E5, no, I see, E5, I want A5 to, there we go. Now, I'm going to run this guy out all the way. I'm going to take the sum of all those numbers. And let's see what happens. Your present value now is $821,729. So the difference in these equals that minus that, and I'm making a point here. Your earnings lifetime, the present value of your lifetime earnings gain is about $400,000. So in other words, you can then ask, is the college education, the investment in it, worth that change in your income? Now, there were a couple of simplifying things. Say that your total cost of your education is going to run around $100,000 here. If that's the case, yeah, this is definitely worth it. It also depends upon, critically, it depends upon what your starting salary is. You drop that a couple, $10,000, $15,000, it becomes not worth it. It also depends upon the discount rate, obviously the differential in the discount rate, but it also depends on the growth rate of your income. Now that's one of the things, two things that I'm going to bring up here. One is, staying in the same job is an absolute disaster. That's why you'll see the successful students who go out there in the professional world shifting from one job to the next, because no company is going to just keep giving them the raises that they want and that they deserve for their skill sets increases and their learning curve accomplishments. So what's going to happen is that if only this growth rate will stay there, only if you are willing to not be loyal. Because the company, if it ever got in trouble, it wouldn't be loyal to you. Don't worry about the loyalty. You've got to keep this growth rate of your income up to achieve this. This present value here at the end. And you have to achieve this in order to make it worth you being in college. The other thing is that that's why we bust our asses with the accreditation and all these rating services like Business Week and all that, is because the higher, the better we are on that, the more likely you are to get these good salaries. You come out of some of the basic colleges and you're probably going to see $30,000 a year. But there's one other thing that I want to show you here. I want to show you something real kind of interesting. Let's take the original story and let's say that the federal minimum wage is increased to $15 an hour, which is the number that a lot of people are talking about now. Son of a bitch. It is not worth it. Unless there is a commensurate increase in salaries for college graduates, you raise the minimum wage, college becomes not a viable option. Because you're getting only, if your salary as a college grad doesn't change, your delta goes from over $400,000 to a measly less than $14,000. Your college education is going to cost you a lot more than that, which means that there is a dynamic involved that as lower wage workers become higher wage workers, it becomes less viable to go to college. So in other words, it's more viable just to stay at the level of education of high school, and we know how great that education is. That's why we have so many people who say, go Cubs. Oh, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said that. But anyway, The point there being that look what present value analysis can do. And we can just tell you the honest truth. Well, I'm thinking of sending my kid to this. It's a cheap college, but it'll be good. Well, then don't send the kid because it's not worth it for that money. It's not what you're spending is going to be more than that kid makes as a present value of future expected net earnings. So these are the kinds of questions that we answer in finance. On a personal and professional level, we can say in a case like this, one of the policy things is that if you do raise the minimum wage, you become it makes college not as nearly as attractive. And the colleges that do survive are going to be busting themselves even more maniacally than they already do, which is insane, to get all kinds of accreditations so that when you come out, you've got a salary that's worth it. And that's why part of the job we have here is to get you so ready that you can walk out there and $50,000 is not unrealistic for for your starting salary. That's all I have for you. Go home. Yeah. Oh, there's no question. You're going to have net earnings. You see, there's going to be this thing what we call the net earnings, and I didn't do that here. You got your student loan. You're also probably going to have other things. We used to think those were small expenses, but they turn out that they are actually rather substantial. Clothing, a place to live because the high salaries are probably going to be in the big cities. Transport expenses, they are going to be there. But the bottom line is that at $50,000, you got a $400,000 delta. So there's going to be enough pad in there, clearly. But boy, if you put up that minimum wage, and that, don't get me wrong, I'm not against raising the minimum wage. But what it does is, the prediction is, this is going to wipe out a lot of small colleges. They're just going to be gone forever. And which is kind of unfortunate, but that's why we're trying, this place is literally, I was for years a teacher at, and I got my degrees at Ohio State. I've tell people this is Ohio State, exactly Ohio State 40 years ago. The same dynamics are going on. The school, the university system in Ohio was collapsing, and essentially there was one cent right in the middle of the state was one central university, and that's what's happening here. So if you're going to have a chance at a high salary, this is the place for it. And we are seeing 50 grand kind of as a level average. Of course, you get this stupid accounting major, $70,000 a year. But we just did a, I'm not supposed to tell these numbers, but at the last department meeting, no, it's because there are some people who would look at it negatively or they would promote it, and we don't want to promote it until we're ready to. But we take this, we take grads and we have this survey that we do of our grads 6 months out. Okay, and we say, what are you making? Yeah, and what are you making? And then we collect that data, and we break it into the straight-up finance. Well, we do the finance and accounting, but we do the straight-up finance, and then the finance insurance double major, and then their finance financial planning, which is it's going to break off soon, too, like insurance did some years back. All things taken together, our average right now is 51.3. The low, okay, the high, we got a couple of SOBs above 75. They had connections up in Chicago with J.P. Morgan and places like that. The low, which kind of leaves my jaw dropping, is 36. And I know where that is. I can tell you what's going on. If you repeat this, I will kill you. No, I was combat army. I have the skill sets. Okay, here's the deal. And I've encountered four of these in the last 2 years. Women who had like above a 3.7. We were setting them up, getting interviews with big employers in Chicago, stuff like that, setting them up. They fell in love with a boy. Well, he's working as an assistant teller our assistant manager at Heartland Bank in Peoria. Bah, bah, bah. And we want to have children. Bah, bah, bah. She threw it away. One of them threw away $70,000 offer so that she could live with her. She got married and they're going to have their first baby.
He should have followed her.
Sure. I mean, he is such a freaking loser. I mean, the kid doesn't even have a chin. Yeah, I got her. And she is a nut. She is gorgeous. I mean, she is just like a model. And I'm looking at her and I go, bitch, what did you do? We were really upset. But we're seeing it. So that she's working as a bookkeeper. And she's probably making no more than about 36, 38 a year. So we see this. And guys who, well, I'm going to stick here with my girlfriend because, I mean, she just started college. I've known her for years. Dude, are you saying, how old was she when you first started? Well, she was 13, but she looked 18, man. So you get to the other side of it, these guys who won't live their potential. And that's why when someone comes into my office anymore, one of the first things, when we get personal, I shut the door and I say, how many attachments do you have? Because if you have attachments, don't talk to me. If mommy and daddy want you to come home and live in the basement and eat Cheetos and play World of Warcraft, don't talk to me. If you have a boyfriend or a girlfriend who is not willing to go with you or come with you when they're ready, don't talk to me because I've got to get you good jobs. Otherwise, you're going to be eating cat food. I mean, seriously.
NBA?
We do. I don't have it on me right now, but I could probably get it easily enough, seriously.
Yeah.